Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome back to the Warehouse Podcast, everyone. My name's Elijah. Here to talk through this weekend series at home against the Milwaukee Brewers. Orioles unfortunately dropped 2 out of 3, but salvage the not getting swept at home. Series left a lot to be desired. Before I dive in too much, just want to say, if you guys could be so kind, you would be willing to follow and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you get your podcasts on. We are on YouTube as well, putting these videos up over here. We appreciate any likes, ratings, subscriptions. If you could leave comments, reach out to us on Twitter, all of the above. We always appreciate that. Feel free to email us at thewarehousepod@gmail.com as well. So, first things first, game one sucked. It was just terrible. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We went up against Freddy Peralta, who for years has been one of the best pitchers in the National League, has struggled with injuries. He was very much not injured on Friday night. So, yeah. On the pitching side for us, Tyler Wells went in, gave up four runs and 4 innings pitched. Jonathan Heasley came in afterward, gave up 6 runs in 2 innings, very promptly optioned to Norfolk. And we made a trade because he was so bad. That's not entirely true, but it's a little bit true. Dylan Tate had a really clean 2 innings. Looked like the Dylan Tate that we want to see. Jacob Webb had a rough inning that would have been a lot rougher if he had not been bailed out by an incredible play in center field by Jorge Mateo, running back into the wall in center to make a catch. On the offensive side, there was one highlight, and that was Colton Cowser. We talked about him in the Boston series. We will continue to talk about him in this series. 2 for 3 with a home run and a double. The home run was off of Peralta. It was the one lone run that he gave up, hung a slider, and Colton Cowser deposited it into the right field seats. Peralta really just showed why he's one of the most dominant arms in the game. You know, that four-seam fastball riding 95, 97 miles an hour. Shut us down, and the Brewers' bullpen is one of the best as well. Shut us down. It is what it is. The Orioles dropped the first game 11-1. Game two, we said we had so much fun giving up 11 runs yesterday. Why not do it again? Let's go do it again. So we did it again. And we also lost 11-5. Put up a couple more runs, but it doesn't really matter when you give up 11. So on the pitching side, Dean Kramer started strong, just kind of imploded to the tune of 7 runs in the 3rd and 4th innings. All in all, he gave up 8 runs, only 6 earned, but across 4 innings pitched. Keegan Aiken turned in a really strong inning in 2/3. We have joked on this podcast, I have joked on Twitter, we've joked everywhere that it feels like Keegan Aiken's time has come and gone, but every time Keegan Aiken is healthy and on this team, he performs. It just is what it is. It's kind of infuriating. You don't really know why he performs. You don't know what works. He just throws 93 to 95, spins all right, he dots it up. He commands the changeup. He commands that little slider. And I don't know. Keegan Aiken's really good. He's here to stay as long as he keeps doing what he's doing. And as long as he keeps doing what he's doing, I'm okay. He can stay. You know, some of the COVID stuff, we're just going to brush past it and appreciate a performing member of the Baltimore Orioles. So The newly acquired Johan Ramirez, I mentioned we made a trade because Jonathan Heasley was so bad. That's not really true. We did make a trade before Jonathan Heasley's poor performance, so Johan Ramirez was on the team already. But he came on after Aiken, and you know, I will pause on him for a minute just because he is a new face. I liked what I saw. You know, I think that the final stat line was not too great. Inning in 2/3, 2 earned runs. But if you consider he came in the 6th inning after Aiken, got one out, sat down, came in the 7th, had a relatively clean 7th, allowed one runner on a single, and then came back out for the 8th and walked to Joey Ortiz and hit Wilson Contreras. William Contreras. Younger brother, William Contreras. We were playing the Brewers, not the Cardinals. So, hit William Contreras. Let those two guys on, and then Mike Bauman comes in, who just, you know, he allows every runner he inherits, regardless of where they are. If there was a way for him to inherit a hitter at home plate, he would do that too. He would let them score. So, that is what it is. You have to just kind of take the two earned runs with a grain of salt, because they were on base, and we let the king of inherited runners scoring onto the mound after Johan Ramirez. So there was, you know, it was an inevitability that those two runners score, is what I'm saying. But I digress. His stuff looked good. You know, there's a reason he has bounced around the league. Well, there are two reasons, and it is the reason why there is always a team that wants him, and there's always a team that doesn't want him. That is the recipe for bouncing around the league. There is a team that wants you and a team that doesn't want you. And then once you get to the team that wants you, they then become the team that doesn't want you. That's another important part of the recipe there. He has great stuff and he has terrible command. It's as simple as that. It's a, you know, mid-90s sinker that is, I mean, it's powerful. It eats in the zone. The problem is it's never in the zone. So, you know, to see him come out, have a couple clean, you know, up-downs, clean in the 6th, relatively clean in the 7th, and then his 3rd time taking the mound is when the command starts to show cracks. I'm relatively okay with that. You know, if we can use him as a serviceable 1-plus inning reliever, we can use Keegan Aiken in that long relief role, I think that's just fine. And, you know, as we'll talk about at the end of this, potentially a couple rehabbing pitchers are on their way back. I think we will have no shortage of guys who can go multiple innings. So Johan Ramirez doesn't really need to do that. Could potentially gear him more towards a one-inning weapon guy, and that would be just fine. So, like I said, then the only other pitcher was Mike Bauman. He did Mike Bauman things. I don't know. We're moving over to the offense. We jumped out to a really quick lead. One kind of fun thing, because we're facing the Brewers, we are facing the returns for Corbin Burns. We got to see our old friend DL Hall start this game against us, and we did some damage to him. You know, Hall is not somebody who's known for giving up hard contact. In the first inning, we jumped out to a really quick 3-run lead. Solo shot from Ryan Mountcastle, a 2-run shot from Jordan Westberg, and then Adley Rutschman also managed to go deep before Hall was escorted from the game. Unfortunately, from that point forward, the Brewers' bullpen was just lights out. They strung together 5 2/3 scoreless, and that was it for the O's. So, in Game 3, down 2-0, backs against the wall, we turned to Corbin Burns. We sent our ace to the mound to defend the sweepless streak. Our fearless leader takes the mound, looks in, throws a ball outside, gets the ball back, and throws it right down the middle. This pitch might have been maybe like 2 inches outside of like true center. But yeah, Mr. Contreras again, younger brother, William, not Wilson. Puts it out over center field. This pitch was pretty bad. This is not how you want to see your ace start the game that is potentially the one that's going to sink this amazing 95 series scoreless streak. But Corbin Burns is Corbin Burns, and he put on the bulldog mentality that makes him so incredible, and he fought through five innings of three-run ball. It's not a glamorous start, but it keeps you in the game, and the Orioles end up winning 6-4. I want to talk about one thing with Burns, just more of a situation. Talk about his fourth inning. There is an infield single. He walks the next hitter. Very uncharacteristic of him. So, it tells you he clearly does not have his best stuff today. And then there is a bunt single. Burns fields it and throws the ball into right field, and a run scores. So you now end up second and third, no outs. One run is already in. The game is very much in the balance at this point. And in this moment is when we really get to see who Corbin Burns is in the absolute best way. The ace, you love them to be somebody who just goes out and, pitches seven innings of zero or one run ball every single time out. That's not how baseball works, right? The ace is the person who can do that, but also when they are not capable of that, they just pull this next level out of themselves. So we just set it up. It's second and third, no outs. One run is already in, and he gets Joey Ortiz to foul out to Jordan Westberg. Extremely weak contact. Foul out to the third baseman. He then punches out Joey Weimer on a nasty 98-mile-an-hour sinker at the knees. Punches him out looking, I should say. And then gets a cutter in on Blake Perkins. Strikes him out as well. And holds the Brewers to just the one run. That's the kind of inning where, again, with the game kind of in the balance, those two runs scoring, which, from a standpoint of two runners in scoring position with nobody out, that's not an unreasonable thing, to hypothesize. Those two runs scoring could tip the scales in the Brewers' favor, and he holds strong, and that almost becomes a momentum swing for us. These two huge punch-outs. Burns comes back out for the fifth. Jacob Webb then throws a scoreless inning. Yennier Cano comes in, gives up a solo shot to make it a 4-3 game in the Brewers' favor. I'm gonna stray from the path I'm walking for 1 second just to say this is why a win is a stupid stat, because Yennier Cano just gave up a run, and then the Orioles' bat scored, and he's the guy who gets the win. So that's why, wins are a stupid stat. There are a number of reasons why, but that's one of them. This is a good example. But after Cano comes out, Danny Coulomb, who just in the most unfathomable way has turned into one of the more legitimate late inning weapons in all of the major leagues. He has been so, so solid. And this year has come back out. He just, you hear Ben McDonald say it. He spins it to win it. He just, has this little, high 80s, low 90s cutter, and then he's got a slider, and then he's got a breaking ball, and he just throws nothing straight. And, he gets punch-outs, he gets weak contact, nobody barrels him up. He's a remarkable, remarkable story, and a testament to Orioles' pitching development, a testament to their scouting department for bringing him in and saying, this is somebody we can work with. Shout out to Danny Coulomb. We are so glad he is a part of the Orioles. And Craig Kimbrel then comes in, punches out the side around two base hits. That was his 420th save of his career. Remarkable feat. Obviously, only a couple guys above the 400 save mark, and he is just still rolling. He has not given up a run since his first time out, if I'm not mistaken. He has been really everything we've been hoping for him to be. His spin rates are up. The fastball has been somewhat low velocity, relative to what we were expecting. He did flash a couple 96s today, but it's got so much hop on it. It comes, he gets incredible extension. He is close to the plate when he releases. He throws from a low arm slot, and the ball just takes off on you. So there's that. His knuckle curve has been every bit the weapon that you dream of it being. He's been able to backdoor it to a number of hitters. which has kind of surprised me. I didn't really think that was a thing that he did. I thought he was the, you know, tunnel in the zone as long as you can and then have it dive out pitcher. But he has been working the back door a good amount. I don't know. You love to see it. It's another type of weapon that he has. And maybe later this year, if we can even break out that changeup we saw once in spring training, then you have a surprisingly multifaceted person for the back end of a bullpen. So, Craig Kimbrel, he is doing everything we could have asked of him at this point. Over to the offensive side today, Cedric Mullins connected with his third home run of the year and added a double. Obviously, Cedric is somebody that, I don't know, he had a 30-30 season. He is somebody that has so much more in the tank, and we have seen him struggle with some lower half injuries. I am cautiously optimistic that Cedric kind of turns on the jets this year, and we start to see a form of him that we have not seen for a little while. Cautiously optimistic, but a couple good swings today. Ryan O'Hearn, who is tearing the cover off of the ball pretty much every time he plays, added a solo shot and had the RBI single in the first inning. Yeah, that opened up the scoring for the Orioles. And then our game-tying and eventually go-ahead rally was kind of pieced together. We had back-to-back singles, Westberg to Holiday. Yes, I said Holiday. And Gunner, Westberg scoring on Gunner's single, and then Adley grounding into a double play to score Jackson, giving the O's a 5-4 lead. Colton Cowser then, in the eighth inning, added an insurance run with his solo shot. That man is on. He's on some. I'm going to talk to him, not to him, I'm going to talk about him shortly. But Colton Cowser is just, I mean, he is slighted by the fact that anyone ever considered Austin Hayes was a starting outfielder on this team. Colton Cowser thinks he should have been the All-Star last year. Colton Cowser is, I mean, he is just staking his claim. He says, this is my outfield. I decide where I want to play on it. I decide when I want to play. I decide when I need a day off. And I decide when I take over the game and I win it for the Baltimore Orioles. It's as simple as that. Colton Cowser, he could do whatever he wants right now.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Backing up a bit, though. In summation, you know, this was not our best series. Obviously, dropped two games, allowed 22 runs through those two games, multiple defensive miscues. But taking a step back, we are second in the AL East. The Yankees are still on a tear that cannot last forever. Our sweepless streak is still intact. Sarah Langs gave the update. We appreciate her. We are now at 96 consecutive regular season series without being swept. And no, I don't know who the Texas Rangers are or what you're referring to. We have 96 consecutive regular season series without being swept. On another note, I talked about Corbin Burnes and how he is our ace and the, you know, what you expect of that ace. If we extend that out to our number two guy as well, Corbin Burnes and Grayson Rodriguez, the Orioles are now 7-0 in games started by either one of them. They are acting like the aces that they are. The top two of this rotation is as solid as it possibly could be. The bats so far, I think, have been bailing out the bottom three of this rotation. But as we will talk about, their are potentially a couple arms on the horizon that are rehabbing. We just got an update on one, and we saw the other throwing a bullpen in Camden Yards. So the last little note that I'll make is there are some good things happening with the bat, you know, besides the Freddy Peralta game. Like I talked about, Freddy Peralta is a special, special kind of pitcher. As an aside, I think that he has the smoothest mechanics. Like, as somebody who really appreciates pitching, I think that he has the smoothest mechanics of anybody in the major leagues. He throws crossbody a little bit. It's kind of like I was mentioning with Kimbrel. Good extension, low release, and really excellent hop on the fastball. So, you know, getting shut down by Freddy Peralta, there are much, much bigger problems to have. He did what he does. You know, he was part of the big three with Burns, Woodruff, and him. He just always has struggled with injuries. So to see him healthy and performing at this level is no huge surprise. It's, you know, it's good for baseball. He did what he does. If the Orioles do not allow 11 runs in that game, it might look very different. You know, once we get to later innings, things are a bit more competitive. But it is what it is. The Orioles walk away winning 1 out of 3. And I'll just take a step back real quick and give a few quick notes here. I think the first thing I want to say, that, you know, obviously there were some pitching woes. Tyler Wells once again allowed a lot of hard contact. There were more hard hit balls than not hard hit balls in his start. And this is, you know, per StatCast using that 95 mile an hour exit velocity threshold. These hard hit balls included Gary Sanchez climbing Mount Baltimore to the tune of 434 feet. I call out this specific home run because it seems like it was the exact same thing as the game against the Angels. If I remember correctly, it was Taylor Ward. A middle in fastball at 92.4 miles an hour. Second inning early in the game, just absolute meatball. Down the middle and absolutely obliterated. And, you know, Tyler Wells was really, at no point in this game did he execute to his arm side. If you are going to face a somewhat righty-heavy lineup like the Brewers are, and you cannot get the ball inside to them, you're going to have a really rough day. We saw, you know, Sanchez sit on this ball over the middle of the plate. We saw Joey Ortiz line a ball down the, you know, down the right field line, pitch that was away. If you cannot make somebody uncomfortable on the inner half of the plate, you will not have the ability, it doesn't matter how good your command is, you will not have the ability to beat them on the other half. There has to be some balance to your game, some balance to your approach. And Tyler Wells, you know, is not making anybody uncomfortable. And he is finding himself in the middle of the plate and away too often. It becomes a little bit predictable. His slider is a solid pitch. The cutter is a solid pitch. But if you can sit on the movement, sliding away from you, you can just poke that into right field. It becomes a very, very easy game. And then anything that stays straight, you know it's not going to be in too much on you. So you can time it up and you can pull it like Sanchez did. I guess the one thing to add to kind of illustrate the point that he was not executing to his arm side, only one pitch all day was a ball to his arm side, a ball off the plate to his arm side. And that was a cutter, which obviously is a pitch that moves to your glove side. There is a chance that he was trying to, you know, front door this cutter, but it was also a good 8 inches above the top of the zone. So it does not seem like it was really supposed to, it wasn't executed to that side of the plate, I guess is what I'll say. You know, maybe he was trying to, like I said, front door it, whatever. But Tyler Wells did not execute to both sides of the plate today. It makes you extremely predictable. It leads to a situation where more contact against you is loud, hard contact than not. Again, we've been talking about Tyler Wells and his issues with living in the middle of the plate, with the home run problems that we saw last year. I still think that Tyler Wells can be a valuable pitcher on this team. I think that we are reaching a point where, you know, he is potentially just more exposed than he was last year. Hitters were able to see him throughout the course of last year. You know, he was working out of the bullpen, but as soon as he moved, or working out of the bullpen in 2022, as soon as he moved to the rotation, he does become a bit of a different commodity. You know, data sets are built out on who he is as a starter. We have talked about how his, you know, how his pitches change. He drops a couple miles an hour, et cetera, becomes more of a finesse guy out of the rotation. And that's all fine, but, you know, it does seem like he is not able to fool people in the heart of the plate. And so I have concerns. We have expressed concerns on this podcast. We'll see where it goes. Unfortunately, the person following him up, Dean Kramer, also gave up more hard contact than not. This is his second time in three starts this year, giving up multiple home runs. He also gave up two against Kansas City in his first start. I will say I'm less worried about Dean because home runs weren't as much of a problem last year. It is still a watch item, but I think the thing that I noticed with Dean Kramer is that he seems to let these innings snowball a little bit. You know, we have seen him get angry. He's a bit animated on the mound. That can really work for you in certain situations. And I'm not actually here to say it doesn't work for him. But I think in certain situations like that, when you rely on getting amped up, so to speak, rather than the more like methodical approach, sometimes something like the Jorge Mateo, you know, miscue in the third inning of yesterday's game, certain things that extend innings can really start to snowball on you, and it's hard to maintain that attack mentality. I think that maybe even that third inning being extended starts to roll into the fourth inning. That's why, you know, the start of the game was much better for him, and then it quickly got out of hand after he starts needing to throw more pitches, starts having these extended innings. It's an interesting thing. I'm a little bit less worried about Kramer because he does not have this history of, you know, getting, you know, having balls obliterated against him. We'll keep an eye on it, though. Just not a great weekend for the starting pitching. Corbin Burnes, I talked to you about him, also did not have his best stuff. And this is a Brewers team that, you know, historically has been very light hitting. Historically, it's been, you look at Burnes, Woodruff, and Peralta, and you say, oh my God, that is a playoff rotation. And then you say, wow, they have nobody who can hit the ball, though. That's not entirely the case this year. They did go get Gary Sanchez, who we talked about. They went and got Rhys Hoskins. Willy Adames can hit the ball. There are some legitimate bats with right-handed power. Christian Yelich is still a factor, of course. It's not entirely the same team that would have received that kind of judgment, would have received the, would have been talked about in such a way that they have this extremely weak offense. I think the Brewers intentionally went out to address that this year, and that was, part of this like whole retooling. But obviously they are still trying to stay competitive because Rhys Hoskins was on a 1-year contract. Case in point, the Brewers can actually hit the ball a bit. They have been this year, and they came out and really just beat the Orioles, very plain and simple. So all the negative stuff is behind us. I promise the rest of this podcast is going to be pretty happy, actually. First person I want to talk about is Colton Cowser. You heard a little bit about him in the Boston series recap. He gave no indication that he plans on slowing down in this series. Game one, he went 2-for-4, double and a home run. In the home run on a hanging slider from Peralta. Game two, 1-for-4, added a stolen base, scored another run. Game three, another solo shot. As of tonight, which is April 14th, of players with 30 at-bats, and I should say Colton Cowser, because he did not, you know, play much in the first week, is not currently qualified for, you know, major league stat totals. So he cannot lead the league in batting average because he hasn't played enough. But of players with 30 at-bats or more, Colton Cowser is leading Major League Baseball with a .441 batting average. He is seventh in Major League Baseball with a .474 OBP. He is first in Major League Baseball with a 971 slugging. And this is not OPS. I stress again, 971 slugging. And then, with a slugging number like that, you can only anticipate that the next thing I'm going to tell you is that he is first in terms of OPS with a 1445 OPS, more than 200 points higher than the person who is next, Tyler O'Neill. And I have to give credit here because when we were doing our preseason podcast, our Tyler Young went ahead and said, you know, he posed the question, who is the Orioles Rookie of the Year? And Jesse and I went and we took this extremely boring approach and we said, well, the top prospect in baseball is going to be here very soon. And he's the top prospect in baseball. So he is going to be the Rookie of the Year for the Orioles. And Tyler said, I don't think that's true. I'm going to take Colton Cowser. And my God, does he look smart right now. Colton Cowser, you know, obviously tore it up in spring training. That is what it is. Made the team, deservedly so. Has been a phenomenal performer his entire way through the minor leagues. You know, I was not saying anything negative about Colton Cowser when I picked Jackson Holliday. I just thought Jackson Holliday would be Jackson Holliday. And there are also no indications that Jackson Holliday will not be Jackson Holliday. But Colton Cowser, my God, he is Colton Cowser right now. No, I mean, he's just showing you everything that he possibly could. He is showing you power. He is showing you plate discipline. He is showing you contact skills. He's showing you defense. You know, we threw him in there at center field this weekend in the middle game. I think that as an Orioles fan, you cannot possibly, like, just look at the state of this team. You cannot look at the state of this team and, you know, see Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, Colton Cowser, Jackson Holliday, and just say the core of this team is so unbelievably strong, and it will be for so long. You know, it, like, ignoring the conversation of extensions, which obviously should be on the table, but ignoring that whole conversation, you have Colton Cowser for 6 years, you have Gunnar Henderson for 5 years, you have Jackson Holliday for 6 years, you have Adley Rutschman for 4 years. I'm sorry. So, you know, the competitive window for this team is so wide open right now. I mean, and these guys are only getting better. There is no reason that any one of them has a reason to take a step back until after they are off this team, really. Maybe you could say Adley will get old enough and catching could wear on him in 3 or 4 years. Sure, whatever. You know, all of these guys are ascending. Their skills are improving. In the case of Holliday, you know, bodies are maturing. That everyone is getting better, and they are already so, so good. And Colton Cowser just being added to that mix is, it's just borderline unfair to the rest of the league. You know, I'm sure other GMs are just, like, kicking chairs, you know, throwing papers off of desks, because the Orioles just keep churning out this incredible talent. And we've seen what the Norfolk Tides are doing. They will continue to do it. You know, the Orioles are showing no signs of slowing down. So, the last little note from this weekend, Jackson Holliday. I talked about him. Jackson Holliday picked up his first major league hit. His father, his wife, Cal Ripken Jr., they were all there to see it. Picked up his first hit today. Like I said, part of the rally that, you know, tied the game and then eventually took the lead for the Orioles. Jackson Holliday actually came around to score the go-ahead run, that fifth run in the game today. And this was all against Abner Uribe. Uribe is a guy who was a rookie last year, just kind of out of nowhere came up with this demonic 102-mile-an-hour sinker. He had a sub-2 ERA, if I remember correctly, last year. So Jackson Holliday did not get this against some scrub, you know, who came in some mop-up duty or something like that. Abner Uribe is gross, and this was a 99-mile-an-hour fastball right on the inside corner of the plate. Holiday turns on it, ropes it into right field on the ground, and you know, ultimately contributes to the Orioles' win today. I kind of chuckle as I say this because he is going to start rounding into form, and we just have him hitting ninth. You know, we just have him as this almost afterthought because the core of the team, even without him, is in such a good place. I heard the Cespedes Family Barbecue guys talking about this the other day. They say, if Jackson Holiday is a complete bust, which, you know, there's nothing saying he will, of course. That's not where they were coming from. If Jackson Holiday is a complete bust, this Orioles team is still in great shape. We won 101 games last year without Jackson Holiday. So, as insane as it is, this number one prospect is just kind of cherry on top, icing on the cake. You know, he is, I don't want to say superfluous because we fully intend to make him a core member of, you know, this group, but he is almost just extra and just, you know, it's all wonderful what he gives us, but if he doesn't, so what? You know, the team is still so good. So you have to just love where the Orioles are right now. And Jackson Holiday getting his first hit, you know, it's kind of breaking the ice. I hope that we get to see him continue to grow. Coming up, we have a 3-game set against the Minnesota Twins. They just lost Carlos Correa. They are, I think, fourth in the division over there. So hopefully this will be a lot easier than that Brewers series was. Like I said, 3-game set. Cole Irvin is going to take the ball tomorrow. I think we swapped him and Corbin Burns for the sake of getting Burns into the game today. Cole Irvin takes the ball tomorrow against Louis Varland. Grayson Rodriguez takes the ball on Tuesday versus Chris Paddock to get back on the nominal rotation. And then Tyler Wells against Pablo Lopez, potential Cy Young winner in the American League this year, Pablo Lopez, on Wednesday. Between Lopez and Chris Paddock, definitely have some really good pitching matchups to look forward to. Both of them are extremely talented. Paddock, you know, maybe doesn't quite have the consistency, was hurt a lot over the past couple years. So hoping that, you know, everything works out and he is back to health and we get a good matchup with him and Grayson. Should be a fun set. And like I said, I think should be a little bit easier than the Brewers series that we just had. Twins are not in the best shape with Correa going down, but we'll see how it shakes out. A few quick notes before I sign off. Kyle Bradish was slated to have a rehab start with Aberdeen on Thursday. That was delayed due to weather, but we did see him in the Orioles bullpen at Camden Yards, throwing a bullpen. Looked like max effort, you know, just in a couple cell phone videos from Danielle Allentuck. Thank you, Danielle. But set to begin a rehab assignment this coming week. Where that's going to be, TBD. Might not necessarily be with Aberdeen, depending on how the minor league schedules and their rotations shake out. But I talked about it a little bit, or we all talked about it on a previous podcast. I don't think any of us really expected Kyle Bradish to be back this quickly. I think that the Orioles, I expected them to really kind of hold him out until later in this year, until maybe even the All-Star break, just for the sake of being gentle with him and making sure we are going into the playoffs full force. They must have seen some really, really encouraging signs from his PRP injection, from all of the throwing that he's been doing. The rehab must be going extremely well if they're considering bringing him back in the first month of the season. So great to see that. Kyle Bradish will be welcomed with open arms. The other pitcher rehabbing and potentially coming back soon is John Means. Mike Elias gave a little update. He said, quote, "This month or next kind of thing is how things are trending." So, you know, John Means has a maximum of a 30-day rehab assignment. He's already had a couple starts. Those starts haven't necessarily gone well. But that said, it's good to see him throwing. And obviously, you know, he could be working on just a couple mechanical things. When a major leaguer goes down there, it's not necessarily, how do I prove myself against these AA, AAA players? It is, I'm going to work on what I want to work on. Ignore the results. So, John Means has been working. Hopefully, we get to see him back we have talked ad nauseum about what this rotation could look like with the additions of Bradish and Means. And you have to love how that Orioles team looks. We talked about, you know, we've gone back and forth, but probably Tyler Wells to the bullpen, and potentially even Cole Irvin to the pen at this point. Gives you another lefty weapon there, another multiple inning guy. The Orioles team is shaping out on the grand scheme of things, you know, even if this weekend was not our most glamorous. So with all that, once again, if you could subscribe to the podcast, follow us, like us, rate us, comment, you know, engage with us. We're on Twitter at The Warehouse Pod. We're also on Instagram and Threads. I almost said IG. That is something that a 16-year-old would tell you, and I'm embarrassed that it came into my mind. But we are most active on Twitter, so definitely connect with us over there. You can email us, thewarehousepod@gmail.com. And yeah, you know, whatever ratings, comments, subscriptions, likes, all depends on the platform, so I can't give you every word. You know what I'm talking about. Everything you could give us, we are very grateful for. It helps us reach new fans. It helps us build this community. And obviously, that's why we're here. We love talking about the Orioles with you guys. So all that said, this has been The Warehouse Podcast. My name is Elijah, and thank you all for listening.